You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Haywire. Like, naked is the theme. Like, people just love getting naked.
The Rohingya crisis in Myanmar has dominated news across the world since a spate of violence which broke out in August. Attacks on police posts by the Arakan Rohingya Salvation Army promoted a military crackdown on the Rohingya, a Muslim minority group in Myanmar. Since then, more than 600,000 Rohingya refugees have fled the country for Bangladesh amidst claims of rape and murder by Myanmar's military. The United States has described the situation as ethnic cleansing. A new book, Myanmar's Enemy Within, aims to explain the roots and causes of this crisis. Producer Max Smith spoke to the book's author, British journalist Francis Wade.
All the conditions were in place that would make, that would appear to make what's happening now certainly a potential outcome. Every campaign of mass violence the world over is preceded by particular processes, large and small. So local, national, political engineering, hyper-local antagonisms, and Myanmar's certainly been no different. In Rakhine State in particular, we've had processes of dehumanization of Rohingya, isolation, so they're confined within camps, villages, pseudo-ghettos within towns. Their restriction on movement is severely hindered, access to healthcare, likewise, access to education. The weight and depth of antagonism they face is an indicator, I think, that were a military to launch a campaign of violence such as this one, then it would receive popular backing. And that's certainly been the case over the past sort of 3 or 4 months.
Is it depressing, I mean, to be aware of all of these complex elements of Myanmar that were just asking for this mass violence to occur? But to not, I mean, we've seen obviously the agencies that have been involved, like the UN, haven't been able to solve this. But I mean, to be aware and then see it happen anyway, I mean, is that hard?
It's very frustrating, very embittering. There's a certain, I guess, emotional remove that journalists have, particularly foreign journalists working on issues that are outside of their sort of personal remit, emotional remit, I suppose. But there were certainly conditions in place that made what we're seeing now a likely outcome. And I'd warned about these. Other journalists, other rights investigators had warned about this going back several years now, if not before. When the first wave of communal violence erupted in 2012, it caused acute segregation. It prompted acute segregation of Buddhists and Muslims in the state, and Rohingya were confined, they were isolated. The propaganda campaigns that sought to cast them as alien, as inferior, were ramped up. These are all indicators that both the community, the target community, isn't wanted in the country. And it helps to normalize violence against them, legitimize violence against them.
Mm. And now we've seen kind of the world's attention, I guess, being directed towards it. And you've had these, you know, naturally people are worried that it could be a genocide on the same level as Rwanda or Bosnia. But I mean, what is unique in your mind about the situation in Myanmar? I mean, is it to do with the religious divide, for example?
It's a very complicated situation. I don't think it can be reduced down to one divide. There's an ethnic cleavage at play. There's a religious cleavage. There's political opportunism at play. So local nationalist leaders, political leaders, who see real incentives in fomenting violence against a maligned minority group like the Rohingya. The military strategy appears to be one of removal of the population, so not necessarily the kind of mass annihilation we saw in Rwanda. They want the Rohingya out of the country. My guess is that with 600,000 plus now in Bangladesh, and immense pressure on the Myanmar government to accept them back, they'll allow a token amount to return to the country. They'll probably go into what the government is going to call model villages, but which will for sure amount to internment camps. And the movement of Rohingya will be tightly restricted from there on out, even more so than it was before they left.
Yeah, you say there's no one kind of factor that has produced this, even though, you know, certainly most people highlight the religious divide. One interesting thing I thought that you examined is compared to what kind of the media has looked at as what might be behind all this is kind of pre-colonial history of Myanmar and the kingdoms that existed before Burma was formed, and how the violence there kind of fed into some of these competing attitudes that even now we see between Buddhists and Muslims. I mean, can you talk a bit about how that is kind of still relevant now?
Well, in Rakhine State in particular, so in Western Myanmar where this violence is taking place, the two main ethnic groups are the Rakhine Buddhists and the Muslim Rohingya. Rakhine Buddhists outnumber the Rohingya 3-1. Many Rakhine appear to display quite a powerful siege mentality. And I think that stems in part from the fact that Rakhine was a separate kingdom until it was annexed by a Burmese king in the late 18th century. And since then, Rakhine have always felt themselves subordinated to, communities outside of their own community. So whether it's the majority Burma group, or whether it was the British colonial power that followed, or the military that followed that ruled Burma after independence. So there's a sense that they've never really been allowed to exercise any agency of their own. And my feeling is that the ire directed by Rakhine towards Muslim Rohingya is, in a sense, born of this sense of besiegement. And ethnic Rakhine often talk about being quote-unquote caught between Burmanization and Islamization. Burmanization being the word that many ascribe to the majority Burma's sort of colonizing strategies of ethnic minority groups. So there's certainly deep roots that go back centuries that are often referenced by Rakhine nationalist leaders to justify the violence and the exclusionary ideologies they preach today.
And once the military became involved, I thought it was really interesting to read about these schools which essentially, you know, indoctrined people in Myanmar to subscribe to these kind of Buddhist views and view Rohingya Muslims with, you know, such extreme hatred to some degree. I mean, it seems like there's almost a brainwashing going on. And this is part of the difficulty, isn't it? It's that actually the wider populace do kind of share these views of the military.
That's right. The military's always pushed this, I suppose, local version of master race theory that has Burma Buddhists at the top of ethno-religious hierarchy. And Muslim Rohingya particularly right at the bottom, and then sort of in descending order from there on out. And there's a feeling that to be a true Myanmar, to be a true Myanmar citizen, one must be Buddhist. And that's regardless of the fact that, you know, there are strong, well-organized Christian communities elsewhere in the country. There are, of course, Muslim communities elsewhere in the country. But this nationalist ideology that the military propagated, meant that to really be accepted into the national community, one had to be Buddhist. And so it used, for example, the Buddhist missionary schools, or it used Buddhist model villages developed in Muslim areas, in order to dilute non-Buddhist populations. So Buddhism almost serves as a kind of transmission line for state interests to reach into what I suppose would be termed unaligned areas.
And just finally, I mean, where do you see an end, if there is at all one, for all of this? I mean, some have talked about the violence and the kind of reaction to it only strengthening the military in Myanmar and perhaps, you know, winding up with absolute power once again. And certainly we have all these refugees that have fled to Bangladesh and, you know, now have to be resettled if they can be. I mean, what do you see the next few years unfolding as?
I'm unfortunately quite pessimistic. I think the vast majority of the Rohingya that have fled Myanmar will remain in Bangladesh unless they can find third country resettlement. The Myanmar government will not allow 600,000 Rohingya to return to the country. My sense is that they will allow a token amount back. They will be organized into a workforce. I think the government has realized that it's, in a sense, shot itself in the foot by forcibly displacing so many cheap laborers. And with the rice harvesting season coming up, it's realizing that it's going to need those workers back. So they'll be returned to the country. They'll be organized into, as I said, what are de facto internment camps. And the communal dynamic now in the state is so toxic, and in fact in the country, that the chances of Rohingya being reintegrated back into society and having their security, you know, guaranteed by the government, by the military, I think is very unlikely, unfortunately. I don't want to make too bleak a prognosis, but at the moment, I think we have to take it sort of month by month. The conditions at the moment and the stance by the stance of the government and the military doesn't bode well.
They are nicking our shit. They totally are.
The Wire. That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.